You're listening to the Food Freedom Life Podcast. My name is Brittany Allison, and I spent 6+ years stuck in diet binge cycles, hating my body and envying others who seem to have it all because I never felt enough. What I discovered in my journey to food freedom and becoming a registered dietitian is this: you can either live your life at war with your mind or learn to work in sync with it. So if you're ready to learn how to be in tune with yourself and evolve your life, welcome to the show. In today's episode, we're going to dive into the hunger and fullness scale, which is a tool that's used inside the intuitive eating framework. I find it super helpful, so I'm really excited to dive into that. But before we get into it, I invite you to join the Empowered Eaters Collective, which is my community-based program designed to get you into brave action so you can find freedom from emotional overeating, binge eating, poor body image, and find your sustainable version of balance. I am currently accepting new members into the program where you get weekly coaching and connection calls, my signature Food Freedom Forever course, bonus courses, 24/7 support in the community, and new content every month. Join now for only $37 a month. Often on the podcast, I talk about big concepts and ways of shifting your thinking away from the diet mentality and into this food freedom way of thinking. But today I wanted to get into the actual practice of intuitive eating and what it's like to use the tool of the hunger and fullness scale, which is really a mainstay in the intuitive eating framework. So you can see what it's actually like to use it, get some helpful tips for how you can implement it into your day-to-day, and start figuring out what it looks like for you in your life. Intuitive eating is a bit of food stuff and a lot of mindset and other work. And so today I want to get into the practical part, the food part of intuitive eating through the hunger and fullness scale. In the work I do with my one-to-one clients, it's a lot of the deeper work, unpacking the patterns and where they're coming from and how they're tied to self-worth and identity and those parts of us that act out of fear and try to protect us from what we're afraid of, and just unpacking the narratives and mindset and our relationships to food and our bodies, as well as the practical stuff that really helps you, you know, kind of conceptualize intuitive eating in your life. I strongly, strongly believe that you need to do the deeper work in order to make the practical application stuff really stick, because otherwise you're kind of just putting a band-aid on the real issues. But there are still definitely some positive takeaways from talking about just the practical that can help you get more ready to ultimately dive into the deeper stuff so you can enter into this work in a way that's not so big and so scary and abstract and complex. So that's what we're going to talk about today. Break it down into a more simplified concept of intuitive eating. Some of these skills you can implement on a daily basis when it comes to intuitive eating, and they can be really powerful, right? Because you start to realize just how much diet culture has disconnected you from things that you're naturally meant to be able to do, right? You're meant to naturally be able to recognize your hunger and your fullness and trust those signals, not doubt them and question them. You're meant to be able to recognize those signals and interpret them and implement them in a variety of different situations in your life and have flexibility with it and all of that. It's so powerful when you start to learn these practical concepts and can reintroduce it back into your life, no matter how long it's been since you were able to do it last, because at some point you were an intuitive eater, even if it was when you were a little baby, you were. And I remember when I was first personally learning about intuitive eating, learning the hunger and fullness scale was just so helpful for me to get into this work, because it was really tangible. It was really hands-on. It made sense. It had some numbers attached to it, which felt safe for me at the time. And since for me, I was leaving behind dieting and macro tracking and exploring intuitive eating, it was a good way to kind of bridge the gap. And before we really dive into it, I just want to give you a little bit of a disclaimer that when you're coming from a diet mentality, it can be really easy to turn the hunger and fullness scale into another diet with more rules to follow. It can feel like, you know, I have to perfectly follow this tool to a T, and I have to eat when I'm perfectly hungry and stop when I'm perfectly full. And I just want you to remember that no, that is not what this is about. It's not meant to be the pursuit of perfection in listening to your hunger and fullness. And if you get too hungry, then you eat too much. Or if you eat when you're not hungry, or if you accidentally eat past fullness, it's not that you've failed. Now you just have new information from your body that you can use in tandem with the hunger and fullness scale tool the next time you have the opportunity to eat. It's very adaptable. It's not meant to be spot on. It's just meant to be an educated guess of where your body is at so you can guide your eating decisions accordingly. It's not more rules to follow. It's a tool. It's a guideline. It's not the law. So just remember that as we go through this. So what is the hunger and fullness scale? Well, it's a tool that's found within the intuitive eating framework to examine and assess and bring awareness to our hunger and our fullness. It's, like I said, not meant to be an exact science, but rather it's a tool, a strategy to help you get more in tune with your body, the times of day when you're hungry, how often you feel hungry, and it can be helpful to learn how the different types of foods you eat satisfy your hunger or if they help you feel full and that type of thing. When you're looking at a picture of the hunger and fullness scale, and I'm going to have a download with this episode that you can take a look at it, you'll see it as a scale from 1 to 10. 1 to 4 is the hunger side of the scale, 5 right in the middle is neutral, and 6 to 10 is the fullness side of the hunger fullness scale. So on the hunger end of the scale, 1, you are totally empty, super, super ravenously hungry. You might feel nauseous, faint, just really unwell. You might also feel so hungry that you're not hungry. You know that feeling? Your body is running on stress and adrenaline at that point because it has no actual fuel. It's not a good place to be. And on the other end of the extreme, you have a 10, which is painfully full. You might have a sick feeling, like very, very uncomfortable. You might not be able to take a deep breath. You're so uncomfortable. I'll break down all of the numbers in between 1 and 10 in just a second, but I think it's really important to recognize here that even though I'm going to give some description and some words that go along with each number on the hunger and fullness scale, it doesn't mean that it's going to apply to every single person at all times. Everybody's body is a little bit different, so as you're learning this, as you put it into practice, I want you to just take it with a grain of salt as you figure out how your body really reacts and responds. This is just another one of those jumping off points to kind of give you an idea to describe what these different numbers may feel like for you. So let's go through the scale from 1 to 10. 1 means that you are totally empty. You haven't had anything to eat in a really, really long time. You might feel kind of dizzy, nauseous, irritable. You might be hangry. You know that word that people used to describe when they're really, really hungry, you get hangry. You might feel kind of spacey mentally. You're kind of in this weird tunnel vision. You might feel super, super hungry, like this kind of primal hunger, which is essentially your body screaming at you that you need to eat something now. When we move up to a 2, you're a little bit less than you were feeling at 1, but you're still pretty ravenous. You might have a little bit of a headache, feel a little shaky or weak or kind of cold. You just don't feel too great. Moving forward, when you're at a 3, it means you're quite hungry. You might be feeling some stomach growling, although I know not everybody gets that sign all the time. You're probably thinking about food quite a bit, and you're feeling like you're eager to eat. You might have some difficulty concentrating well on your task, like if you're working, for example, you might find yourself getting distracted by food quite a lot. There's an empty feeling to your stomach. I like to call 3 meal hungry. It's almost that level of hunger that you're at. It's inappropriate for a meal amount of food. 4 is there's a slight emptiness to the stomach. This is the first sign of hunger where you begin to think about food. You have a slight empty feeling, but you're not lightheaded or dizzy or anything like that. You're just thinking about food a bit more. You feel that slight emptiness. You could call this snack hungry. When I think of 1 through 4, those levels on the hunger and fullness scale on the hunger side of things, those are the different levels of hunger, and how you're feeling is going to depend on when's the last time you had something to eat, or maybe what you ate, what your meal or snack was composed of. So if you had something just like only crackers, for example, maybe you were at a 4 when you had those crackers, but then again an hour later, you're back at a 4 because they didn't really keep you full. So the hunger side of the scale can also really help you figure out if what you're eating is actually keeping you full for a decent amount of time. If not, that could also be helpful information to say you need to add something to what you're having so that you're not going for food every single hour, unless, you know, that's what you want to be doing, which is totally fine and totally up to you if that's what you want, if that's what feels good for you. Now moving on to a 5 on the hunger and fullness scale. This is the neutral place. You're not hungry, you're not full. You might feel this way like an hour-ish or so before or after a meal or a snack when you're not necessarily hungry or full. You're not really thinking about food. You're just kind of chilling and hanging out. If you've been dieting for a long time, you might not really feel this neutral place too often. That's okay. The more you get into learning about your body and how to best honor your hunger and fullness, you're going to be able to feel and be comfortable at this place more often. moving up on the scale to the fullness side of things, 6 is where you start to feel full. So if you're eating, you'll start to notice some of the more subtle signs of fullness begin to show up. This is likely how you feel after a snack. You're not full, right? But you've got some food in you, not a ton though. And if you're eating a meal, you'll likely want to keep eating. 7 is that nice, comfortable fullness. Your stomach might feel just a tiny bit distended. You can physically really notice that there's food in your stomach, but it's not uncomfortable in any way. Next, 8 would be very full, potentially starting to get slightly uncomfortable. It's not a bad thing to be at this place because when you're at an 8, if you do happen to feel uncomfy, it will go away within 30 minutes or so. You might also get to this place if you're eating something that you haven't had in a really long time, you know, if it tastes really yummy, you really enjoy it, or maybe if you're still new to listening to your hunger and fullness, you've been restricting for a while, it might be hard to stop before getting to this place or even a 9. An 8 is also a place that you might want to eat to if you want to eat less often throughout the day. Like if you don't have time for a snack or if you'd prefer to not have a snack during the day and you really just like having larger meals, you might want to end up at an 8. 9 is where you may begin to feel stuffed. So your clothing might feel tight. You might feel a little bit more uncomfortable. And then 10 on the furthest end of the fullness spectrum is when you do have that painful or sick feeling, like you need to lay down. You might not be able to take a deep breath. It's just really not a good feeling. Just hearing me say some of these descriptors and associating them with numbers, there may be spots where you're like, oh, that doesn't really resonate with me. And then there are other parts where it might really sound like you and you know exactly what that feels like. It's okay if you have both. Like I said, if you've been dieting and restricting for a long time, your awareness of these hunger and fullness signals very well might be off, or you might just have different sensations when you're at each of these numbers, or perhaps a combination of both of those things. Something with fullness that's helpful to know is that 6 is beginning to feel full. 7 is comfortable fullness. And I think especially when people first start learning about intuitive eating and using the hunger and fullness scale, they have a tendency to feel like they have to stop eating at the first sign of fullness, or that fullness should be like totally avoided. And this is just something that's really drilled into us by diet culture, that fullness equals gaining weight. It's a bad thing. You should avoid it. When in reality, we're going for that comfortable level of fullness and not the first sign of fullness. Being full does not inherently mean that you're gaining weight. Not that gaining weight is a bad thing by any means, but it just means that your body has had enough food at a given point in time. Especially if you're having a meal, you haven't had enough at that point when you're just feeling those first signs of fullness and you certainly haven't eaten too much. Like, nope, one step further. So before I dive into more, I just want to take a second and talk a bit about why the hunger and fullness scale needs to be approached with some nuance and some awareness about how it might not be so helpful for certain people, potentially you included. I think the number one thing is that it can bring up feelings and some not so great memories about dieting, tracking, if that was what you did when you were dieting at any point. Anytime we bring numbers into the equation, and then especially when we use it in tandem with things like journaling or keeping track of times of day and food choices, it can feel very similar to what you've done in the past within the realm of diet culture. And getting close to a dieting behavior can sometimes just bring up a lot of dieting thoughts and then maybe negative self-talk and self-criticism and maybe lead into actual dieting behaviors, which makes this sort of tricky and something to just be approached carefully. Because it definitely can trigger a whole lot of perfectionism and feeling like, oh, if I'm not at a number 3 or 4, then I shouldn't eat because, you know, that's the best time to start eating. Or I'm having a really hard time noticing the difference between 3 and 4 and just getting really hung up on those little differences of what number you're at. And so some of this is also just recognizing that, again, this is not meant to be a perfect science. It doesn't really matter whether you're at a 3 or 4. It doesn't really matter whether you're starting to eat at a 4 or a 3, as long as whatever choices you make feel right to you in your body at that moment in time. Ultimately, it's really about making your own choices and using this tool to bring awareness to what the feelings are, not to judge the feelings or create rules about the feelings. And then finally, and I touched on this a little bit earlier, the different descriptions at these different levels on the hunger and fullness scale are not always going to represent your personal experience in your body. what hunger and fullness feels like at different levels can be different for different people. Like, for example, maybe for you, a big indicator of hunger is a headache, right? And you have to determine what level on the scale that is for you. You have to think outside the box for that. And then with that, on the fullness side of the scale, some of us maybe get more stomach distension than others when we get full. And sometimes that happens sooner. Sometimes different foods make that happen earlier. And that doesn't necessarily mean that we're stuffed and overly full. Maybe you're just wearing tight clothes on that day. So there's a lot of nuance in terms of how these things can present individually for you. It's not a one-size-fits-all approach, and there's not just one way that hunger and fullness can feel. So it's really important for you to explore that for yourself. What I've described are just generic, and so it's your job to take the generic, feel it out, try to implement the tool, and figure out, okay, what does my body feel like at each of these numbers on the hunger fullness scale? There are a lot of small details, and the signs of hunger and fullness can show up really different for each and every one of us, physically, mentally, emotionally, and again, it's unique to each and every one of us. And so I think the key takeaway from all of it, though, is that there's not just physical signs of hunger and fullness, although those are definitely important, but it also shows up in these mental and emotional ways too. So I wanted to get into some more of the bigger picture, physical, mental, emotional ways that hunger and fullness show up for us so that you can start to maybe identify which ones resonate with you and your body. So a couple of these bigger physical signs and symptoms of hunger might be that your energy level's low, you're tired, feeling sluggish, you don't really want to do too much, you don't feel too great, maybe a little bit lethargic, and then you might feel hunger in your stomach might be growling, you may have some hunger pains, that empty feeling in your stomach. Another sign of hunger for what might show up for you mentally, you might have trouble concentrating, maybe you have a bit of a headache, you might feel dizzy or lightheaded, or like you can't really focus on what you're working on, you're getting distracted a lot. You might also be thinking a lot about food, and a lot of people don't really realize that thinking about food all the time actually is a sign of hunger. It's your brain trying to get you to eat something by just hyper-focusing your attention onto food. And then the next place you may feel hunger is emotionally and in your mood. You might feel irritable. Some may describe that as hangry. You might feel cranky, short-tempered, generally just disinterested in what's going on. You might also feel kind of fuzzy and disconnected, or like that tunnel vision kind of feeling. You might also feel a bit impulsive. That can come with hunger as well. And these signs and symptoms, they have ranges too. So in the example of thinking about food and eating, that can be a really early sign of hunger, something that might show up at a 4, like we talked about earlier, right? But then it might also progress all the way to, I can't stop thinking about food and eating. And you might feel obsessed with it, fantasize about food and eating. That might happen at a 1. So there are ranges to all of these signs. Same with, let's say a physical sign for you is a headache. Maybe you get a slight headache at like a 3, and then at a 1, you have this pounding headache. Everybody's a little bit different, and each of these signs have a range. And so just figuring out what are the signs that your body gives you, what is the range that exists within your body? And whenever I think of the physical, mental, emotional levels of hunger, those can show up anywhere, you know, in that 1 to 4 side on the hunger side of things, like moodiness, irritability, crankiness, you know, might be a 1 for one person, and that might, it might be a 3 for another person. So again, I think it's really important to just recognize your unique hunger and fullness signals and where they might fall in the spectrum for you and what your personal range is like for each. Something that tends to happen when you're in diet culture for a really long time is that we start to feel hungry. It's those first early signs of hunger, but in reality, they're actually signs of more advanced hunger. You've gotten so used to ignoring the more subtle signs of hunger and only listening to the extreme ones that the extreme signs feel subtle, if that makes sense. But the issue with this is that when you're so hungry, you end up having to eat so much in order to be full, and then you end up being too full. For example, and again, it's a little bit different for everybody, but typically stomach growling is a 2 or 3 on the scale. It's not the first sign of hunger. It's more advanced hunger. Same with things like a headache or dizziness or lightheadedness, big mood changes like irritability, but you might only know those signs of hunger and not notice the more subtle ones because your body's gotten used to you ignoring those more subtle signs of hunger, and the emotional regulation of hunger and fullness has been thrown off. This is lifelong work, just like everything else, but I mean, for me, even last week, I can remember saying like, oh man, I'm feeling so tired. I just don't feel so well. And then I kind of thought about it in my day and I realized like, oh yeah, I haven't eaten in a really long time. I'm definitely just hungry. Because sometimes you can get distracted with your day and stuff happens. Sometimes having the scale and using it as a tool can help you almost reverse engineer why you're feeling a certain type of way. When it comes to fullness and the physical, mental, emotional signs of fullness, starting with the physical signs, the thing that most people recognize primarily as a feeling of fullness is that full, distended feeling in the stomach, almost like a heavy feeling. And I think it's important to know that it's actually totally normal for your stomach to be distended a little bit. That doesn't necessarily mean that you're bloated or that you've eaten too much. It just means there's food in your stomach. And that feeling of fullness has signs and symptoms that range from subtle to really, really uncomfortable. Another physical sign of fullness is an increase in energy. So again, that's kind of the flip side to when you're hungry, right? You might have that drop in energy a little bit when you're hungry, and it makes sense because when you eat, you're literally putting calories and energy into your body. So you get that little energy boost when you eat, but perhaps when you're feeling really, really full, you might have a drop in energy. When it comes to the mental side of fullness, if we think about that sign of hunger where you're thinking about hunger and that has a range, the same thing happens with fullness on the other end of the spectrum. If you've ever been really, really full, literally the last thing you want to think about is food or what you're going to eat later or whatever it is. When you're full, you think about food less and you have that diminished desire to eat. For most of us, when we're tuned into our hunger and fullness and when we aren't driven by a ton of external narratives that are chattering away in our minds, we don't want to eat when we're full or even we don't want to eat when we're not hungry. As a personal example, I was out the other day with Adrian and he was really excited to go to our favorite coffee shop and get a scone. And I was just like, oh man, I'm just so not hungry. That doesn't even sound good to me. And generally, I love the scones. They make this amazing raspberry scone. And I usually always want to have one, but I was just like, I don't really want to eat that right now. I just wasn't hungry. My body was like, no, we're good. For the emotional signs of fullness, a pleasant or relaxed mood can be a symptom of fullness on the flip side of hangry, right? When we're feeling full, we feel safe, we feel secure. It's very soothing. Food does all of those things for us, so it makes sense that it impacts our mood. And then there's sleepiness, which is a sign of fullness that I think gets a bad reputation. And it makes sense that in the world that we live in, we don't really have time to just rest and slow down. We tend to be very scheduled and it's very go, go, go. Feeling drowsy after eating lunch can feel super inconvenient, but it's not necessarily a sign that you've eaten too much or you've done anything wrong or that you've eaten the wrong things or anything like that. It's kind of an extension of a pleasant or relaxed mood. If you think about babies and animals, they nap after they eat, right? I mean, Archie, he sleeps every single time after he eats a meal. Drowsiness isn't necessarily a symptom of fullness that indicates you've eaten too much or that you're, you know, too high on the fullness scale or anything like that. If you're feeling so drowsy, it can be a sign that maybe your blood sugar regulation is off. And that's definitely something I talk about with my clients if that's happening an extreme amount. But a bit of drowsiness is not a bad thing. When we talk about fullness, most of the extreme fullness signals are really just physical discomfort. And so how do you use the hunger and fullness scale? How do you actually put all of this into practice? For me, I really emphasize a couple of things. The first is that it's not, absolutely not, a requirement for you to use this tool in any specific way. We can do the work on hunger and fullness levels and hunger cues and all of that without using the scale or tracking anything. I also emphasize that initially, it's honestly best to just forget the fullness side of the scale. I like to focus on honoring your hunger and really learning the hunger side of the scale. This is important to focus on first, because if you're not honoring your hunger, you're not going to be able to honor your fullness either. It's really, really difficult to stop at a comfortable level of fullness if you're so hungry going into the meal or snack. We don't need to complicate all of this with questioning if you're eating too much. And I like to think about hunger and fullness kind of like a pendulum, right? If in the middle, that pendulum is hanging out at a 5, that neutral place, if we pull that pendulum all the way up to a 1, when we let it go, it's going to swing all the way over to a 9 or a 10, right? We are so hungry, we have to use so much food in order to satisfy that level of hunger. It swings all the way back and forth because then we're really full. We maybe feel guilty and bad about that. We don't want to eat for a really long time. Maybe we restrict. We get pulled back up to a 1 or a 2 again, and then it just keeps repeating itself over and over. we want to really work on learning those more subtle signs of hunger, honoring the hunger side of the scale, you know, figuring out what is a 3, what is a 4, what do those things feel like, and working on eating when we're at those places. Because when we can eat, when we're more gently hungry, when it's a more comfortable level of hunger, that pendulum is not going to swing so far over to the fullness side either. So that's why I really like to focus on the hunger side first. I think it's so important to stay there. And I know it's hard if, you know, it doesn't immediately see an impact on the fullness side, but I promise that with time, with honoring your hunger, what's left on the fullness side is really going to regulate. And any other work that we need to do, that will come in terms of, you know, impulsive eating behaviors, emotional eating behaviors, that kind of thing. But honestly, honoring your hunger really does do wonders in turning down the volume on a lot of those other behaviors, solving some other behaviors in some cases. So let's just start with the hunger side. So first, starting with hunger, first explore what hunger cues feel like for you individually. So starting off with the general, like we mentioned before, of just what does hunger feel like? What are some common cues of hunger? And then going into what do you recognize as your personal hunger cues? And then we want to refine that further. What do you feel like mentally, physically, emotionally at each level of the hunger side of the scale? You can make this practice your own. You can create your own different definitions for the levels of hunger. You can decide what information you want to keep track of or what you don't want to track. You can change what the practice is called. Some people don't like that it's called a scale. You know, just make it yours. That could look like keeping a little download of the hunger and fullness scale in your notes app on your phone so you can check with it before you eat. It could look like also keeping a note or a journal of writing it down and exploring how you feel before you eat, what level of hunger you're at. It could also just be popping in at random times of the day, getting curious about, where do I think I am on this scale right now? What physical, mental, emotional signs is my body giving me? How do I know where I'm at? The whole point of intuitive eating is to just let go of outside rules and expectations and definitions. And so we really want to approach this just as an opportunity to redefine this whole part of this for you as an individual if you want to. And so when we get into the practice a little bit further, because hunger is one of those things where a lot of the times people do the work and then they get to the point where they're honoring their hunger to a point, we go on, we do other work, and then they realize, I'm not actually honoring my hunger all the way still. I'm holding back because of XYZ reason. And so sometimes we have to circle back, revisit hunger with a deeper understanding of what honoring our hunger is. And so sometimes when people write their own levels, it's interesting to have them come back later and rewrite those levels again and just notice how maybe things that they thought were early hunger were actually more advanced hunger, and now they can recognize what those more subtle signs are. It's really an evolving practice. And then later when we do fullness, we look at them in tandem with satisfaction levels. We don't just look at them on their own. And we really pay attention to how important satisfaction is, even in terms of how we feel fullness, because just feeling full is not the only reason that you might want to stop eating. You need satisfaction and to feel satisfied in order to feel comfortable with stopping eating. You can be full and not satisfied, satisfied and not full. So that's another layer to all of this. And bringing attention to fullness can also help us to make sure that we're honoring our hunger by eating enough. And this is one of the reasons why sometimes it's helpful to reintroduce fullness, because it's an opportunity to look again at those hunger levels and just notice how those things interact. An example of somebody who maybe constantly feels hungry, like you're feeling hungry every hour or something like that, we could have that person check in with their fullness a bit, and we can see like, oh, it's because maybe you're never really eating to comfortable fullness, and as a result you're hungry again really soon because you're never full. And how might that change if you eat to a comfortable level of fullness? And then maybe you're not ravenous again in an hour. So there are a lot of different layers to this practice. I found that a lot of people who I tend to work with tend to be chaotic, unconscious eaters. They're typically very busy and forget to eat, or they just kind of push it off as not a main priority because of work or parenting or whatever. And for these individuals, there needs to be a lot of emphasis on recognizing hunger signals, honoring hunger signals, eating, and then this sort of overlaps into fullness like I was mentioning earlier, but also eating to satisfaction so that you're not constantly feeling these subtle hunger signals all day long just after eating. But yes, especially for the chaotic, all over the place, busy type of people, hunger tends to be one where we spend a lot of time. So looking at this hunger scale can be really, really helpful. A lot of times when I have worked with somebody who is a chaotic, unconscious eater, one of the practices that we will try to do is set some benchmarks throughout the day to check in on their level of hunger. So for example, if somebody works at a desk, instead of setting a timer for every hour or something like that, which can definitely feel overwhelming for some people, we'll come up with certain times throughout their day that they can do a little check-in. So maybe it's whenever they get up to go to the bathroom, they think to themselves on a scale of 1 to 10, what's my hunger level? Or maybe whenever they get out of a meeting, then they take a brief moment and check in on their level of hunger. Based on that level of hunger, do what you need to do. Do I need a meal? Do I need a snack? Am I good? Do I need a different kind of break? With practice, it becomes more natural for you to start to recognize the hunger signals that you have. And instead of saying, okay, every time I get out of a meeting, I'm going to check in on my hunger, you'll begin to do it more automatically versus having those external cues to check in. For some people, setting reminders in their phone is really helpful. But if you're the kind of person that maybe doesn't have a ton of routine, it's helpful to anchor this practice in something else that you're doing during the day, because that can just help it make it become part of your existing routine instead of adding a new routine on top that might not be as sustainable. But once it's automatic, you're like, okay, go to the bathroom, then I'm going to check in on my hunger level. So how do you incorporate the hunger scale without it being triggering or diety? Or how do you practice intuitive eating without this scale if you do find it triggering or diety? The first thing is really to use this as a tool to get curious about your patterns, not use it as an opportunity to judge yourself. It's really important to note that you're not bad, you're not wrong. If you find yourself regularly in the outliers of the scale, if you regularly are in the 1 or 2 side of the hunger, or the 8 or 9 or 10 with fullness, it's not wrong, it's not bad. It's just another awareness piece to add to your toolbox. We really need to also make sure that we're clear on the intentions behind tracking hunger and fullness, and that we really frame this in the right context, that it's just information. There's no right, there's no wrong. Everything is neutral information. If we're tracking it alongside food choices or times of day or things like that, we're not judging the food choices. We're not trying to limit what we're eating. We're trying to make sure that we're eating enough, if anything. This is meant to be a neutral tool. It's not supposed to be something that's extreme. And I can see how it can be triggering for somebody, especially if you have a history of dieting and using numbers and trackers and things like that. It could be a slippery slope to work back into that way of thinking. And for those of you that may not like using numbers, another thing that you can do is just use your words to describe the level of hunger, the level of fullness that you're at. So simply checking in and asking yourself, how does my stomach feel? Does it feel comfortable, uncomfortable, or neutral? This can be a helpful way to do this hunger fullness assessment, because it removes the numbers entirely. It makes it less complex because it's just 3 things versus 10. You only have to think comfortable, uncomfortable, neutral versus this whole long scale of numbers. Especially for people who maybe have been avoiding fullness or who feel like fullness is bad, it sort of introduces this idea of what would comfortable fullness feel like? Same with hunger. What would comfortable hunger feel like when it's not so extreme? And being able to distinguish that neither of these things are inherently good or bad. There are comfortable and uncomfortable versions of both hunger and fullness, so you can lean into maybe what those look like. The other thing is to just really become aware of whether perfectionism is popping up so that you can explore that information. It doesn't mean that you're doing it wrong. It's information. It's something about this practice triggered your perfectionism. This is one of the reasons why it's really helpful to have already done the work around rejecting diet culture, unpacking some of the societal stuff and mindset, reframing narratives before doing hunger and fullness, just so that by the time you get here, you might already have that awareness of, hello, perfectionism, where are you coming from? Why are you here? There's no perfect way to do this. Just remind yourself of that. Exploring our own hunger signals and recognizing the nuances that are unique to us individually is really what this is all about, because it might not be the same signal for you as it is for the next person. And also recognizing, you know, what is very hungry versus what is just a little bit hungry? What is snack hungry versus what is meal hungry? And with anything else, intuitive eating, this is not just a one-size-fits-all solution for everybody. It's a tool that's going to work for you, but you may have to adapt to it, and that's okay. And if doing some of this practical work on intuitive eating is something you want to explore more, just a reminder that you can join the Empowered Eaters Collective for only $37 a month. Or if you want to work with me one-on-one, I am currently accepting new clients. You can get more information at the link in the show notes. I did create a freebie for you that you can download within the show notes as well. You just have to sign up for my email list in order to get it. It includes the hunger fullness scale, the descriptions of what each number is, as well as some opportunities for reflection and some activities for you to kind of implement it into your life in your own way. So if you want to download that, be sure to head to the show notes, grab your freebie, and you'll be on your way. And if you enjoyed the episode, if you learned something new, share about this episode on your stories on social media if you learned anything, or if you liked it, you can leave a rating and review either in Apple Podcasts or Spotify. These are two places that your ratings and your reviews really, really help me and boost the podcast rankings and help me get the message out to more people. It's a really simple, easy, free way you can support me, and I really appreciate it. So thank you so much again for tuning in, and I will see you next time.